What's going on, guys? It is a Wednesday night. That means it is your AEW Dynamite review. It is January 8th, 2025. I am the Sala Monster. Been a lot of wrestling over the last few days. I watched back-to-back Tokyo Dome shows over the weekend. What I was most looking forward to on that second show, Wrestle Dynasty, was the return of Kenny Omega. He had a match against Gabe Kidd on that show. We have not seen Omega in the ring in over a year. And I wanted to see what Kenny Omega would we get on that show. And I am happy to report the Kenny Omega that we got was the Kenny Omega of old. Kenny Omega went out there and already here, we're 8 days into the year, had the match of the year for 2025. So I knew coming into this show, Kenny Omega can still go. The old Kenny Omega is still there. But what would they have him doing on the show? Because Kenny Omega was advertised for Dynamite tonight. Didn't say what he was going to be doing, didn't say who he was going to be addressing or anything like that. But I wanted to see what are they going to do with him. Who are they going to have him feud with as that first program back? You know, we're building now to this big show in Australia next month. And so they built everything around Omega and they saved him for the closing segment on this show. He came out there and we had, by the time this show was over, I'd say a pretty good sense of where things seem to be headed for Grand Slam. But the thing I will say about Kenny Omega, it's great to have him back. Number one, I've been saying this for the longest time. A lot of people made hay about the fact that he was making his in-ring return on a New Japan show. And really, it was a joint show, but I mean, come on, it was a New Japan show. Why is he making his return there? Why is he not making his in-ring return first in AEW, right? Which is his home company. And I think he kind of looked at it as this loyalty that he still has to New Japan, and also just, what am I going to look like? What am I going to feel like? All right, let me get in the ring and move these bones again and get in there with somebody and see how my body reacts. And he passed that test with flying colors. So now the ring rust, there was no ring rust, okay? If there was ring rust, it's all shook off now. And now we have him back on Dynamite, hopefully every single week. This is what Tony Khan has needed for a very long time. MJF is back, right? Fairly recently, they got him back. He was gone for a while. But Kenny is their guy. Kenny Omega, he is AEW. He is one of the founding fathers of this company. He is a former AEW world champion. He is the heart and soul of this brand, and he has been missed. And now, Tony Khan has him back in the fold to kick off the new year, and that's a huge thing. But what we got tonight was a tease for something with Omega and Ospreay and the Callis family leading into the Australia show next month. The one thing I'm watching for and I am hoping for is that as we get deeper into the year, Kenny needs to be the guy they sort of rally around and the guy they build around. And hopefully he can stay healthy and you know, knock on wood, everything will be fine and he won't have a relapse of the diverticulitis or anything, because that's a very serious thing. But they need to really build around him. He is the nucleus of this company. And he could talk all he wants to in promos about, oh, AEW doesn't need me and all this stuff. Yes, they do. Now more than ever, AEW needs him. And maybe it won't make a huge dent as far as attendance and stuff. I don't think it's going to really rely on any one person. But he has to be part of this rebuilding process as we head into the new year, trying to regrow this audience again. Kenny Omega is a familiar face that people know of from the beginning of AEW, but also he can go out there and have kick-ass matches that tear the house down, which is also part of the heart and soul of what this company was built on. You could talk about stories and all that stuff, but this company was built on having great fucking wrestling matches. And that's something Kenny Omega is better at than most people in wrestling today. So it was great to have him back on the show tonight. We also had a casino gauntlet match. Tony Khan loves these gauntlet matches. We're getting two of them. We had one tonight. We're getting another one for the women next week. But tonight, it was to decide a number one contender for Jon Moxley's AEW World Championship, who will challenge him on Dynamite next week for the AEW title. It's the maximum, what are they calling it? Maximum Carnage? Is that what they're dubbing that episode, right? The Maximum Carnage episode of Dynamite. So we had our gauntlet match tonight, and a surprise winner, somebody I was not expecting to be the victor and to go on to get that title match next week, Powerhouse Hobbs. He's challenging Jon Moxley next week for the championship, and He is somebody who has been in the ring with Moxley before. In fact, the last time that he shared a ring with Jon Moxley before tonight, he got hurt. That's when he ruptured his, I think it was a patellar tendon injury. And he missed 7 months of his career. So there is some history there to play off of. They don't have a lot of time to play off that history because the match is in a week. They do have Collision this weekend. I'm hoping they lean more into that. We'll talk more about that when we get there. But that was a refreshing finish. Now, what happens next week? I'm not expecting a refreshing outcome to that match. But of all the choices they could have gone with in this gauntlet match, I don't object to them putting Powerhouse Hobbs over in that situation. What I do object to is focusing too much airtime on Jeff Jarrett and MJF. We had a Jeff Jarrett MJF segment that, honestly, the segment itself was not bad. But the idea that this is what MJF is potentially going to be wrapped up in here for a while, that just, you know, that just makes me shake my head. We'll talk about that. We have some potential news as well on Malakai Black. Stop me if you've heard this before. I know these reports bubble up every few months. I'm waiting on the inevitable Instagram video, the rant on Instagram from Malakai refuting all of this. But we do have news on Malakai Black, and it's being reported this time by a source that I do think is very reputable. And so there could very well be something to this, and we'll get into that as well here as we go on in the review. None of the new champions that were crowned, AEW personalities who walked out of Wrestle Kingdom or Wrestle Dynasty with titles this weekend, were actually on the show. We got a video package, but there was no Mercedes Moné, who won her match with Mina Shirakawa on Sunday. No Konosuke Takeshita, who is now a double champion. He won the Never Openweight title this weekend, so he has that and the international title. He was not there, and the Young Bucks were not there. Now, the Young Bucks have been off of AEW television for a while. They are now the IWGP Tag Team Champions. Once again, they were not present on the show either. But again, this is your Dynamite review. We're going to talk about everything top to bottom here on this show. It is January 8th, and before I even go on, I just want to say to all of the folks who are out west in California right now who are potentially in the path of these raging wildfires. I mean, it's all over the news, and it's only getting worse. It's just, it's very scary the way this is spreading, and it's just sort of out of control. So if you are in the area, if you are in the path of what's going on there, if you are impacted in any way by it, please stay safe because that is a very scary situation. It took all of 1 week, but the Pointer Sisters have been benched. At least for this week. They were already on the back burner. We had the new Dynamite theme song, I'm So Excited, last week by the Pointer Sisters. And this week we had a cold open. So we had no intro music at all. I hope he didn't pay too much money for it. But yes, we had no Pointer Sisters tonight. Excalibur, Matt Menard, and Ian Riccaboni were on commentary tonight. Ian was in to replace Tony Schiavone, who we were told was on assignment. So they opened the show tonight with Will Ospreay one-on-one with Buddy Matthews. Never a bad idea to open the show with a Will Ospreay match. As Buddy Matthews entered, they were airing highlights on the screen on the inset from his win way back in November on the Full Gear pre-show on the Zero Hour. He won a four-way match. That's the last time we saw him on TV. We have not seen him in action since until tonight. And I said it then, I'll say it now. It's very weird to me how they went right from Full Gear into the Continental Classic. Buddy Matthews won that four-way match. You know who else was in that match? The Beast Mortos. They put the Beast Mortos in the Continental Classic and not Buddy Matthews. Now, the Beast Mortos didn't win. I don't think he won a single match. I think he got 0 points in the entire tournament. So better him than Buddy Matthews, I guess, but it's just bizarre to me that he would win, Mortos loses, but he earns a spot in the Continental Classic. Just doesn't make any sense. Now, the announcers here tried to sell the idea that Matthews was upset that Ospreay had eliminated Brody King from the Continental Classic. I think he's upset about the Continental Classic, although for very different reasons. Has nothing to do with Brody King. But these two were moving at a fast pace here. They were having a great match here. Both men, they hit the ropes. They crashed into each other on a double crossbody attempt that left them both down. Ospreay managed to land a leaping kick and then a flying forearm. Matthews avoided a super kick in the corner, and he delivered a lung blower. Ospreay rolled to the outside, and Matthews delivered a somersault senton. Back inside, Matthews delivered a meteora from the top rope, covered him for a near fall. Both men ended up on the apron. Ospreay attempted an os cutter from the apron. So he jumped onto the ropes, dove backwards. Matthews caught him, and he sent Ospreay flying off the apron right into the edge of the announce desk. And when he hit the desk, Excalibur made the comment, "This is a solid oak desk," he said. "Not a chance in hell that that is a solid oak announce desk. Not a chance." Ospreay managed to come back in the ring. Matthews avoided an os cutter, landed a stomp for a close near fall. Ospreay recovered. He hit a Styles Clash, which got another close near fall. And then he delivered the Hidden Blade as Matthews just sat there on his knees staring at him, just taking it. And he hit the Hidden Blade, and he won the match. And this was just like the way that Malakai Black lost to Adam Cole. They had a match a couple of months ago. At least in that match, though, if you remember, Malakai he was selling a leg injury. Leg or an ankle, whatever it was, he couldn't stand up. So he just sat there cross-legged and basically said, "Hey, just give it to me." And Adam Cole lowered the boom. So it was a very similar finish, except in that case, Malakai had a reason. Right? He couldn't stand up. So he basically just kind of gave up and said, "All right, hit me with it. Hit me with your best shot." Here, it didn't make any sense. It was just stupid because it's not like he was defenseless or he was kind of out of it and loopy. He's just like, "All right, just go ahead. Just hit me in the head." Just, okay. So that looked very dumb. So Ospreay picks up the win. Other than that, real good match. When it was over, Ospreay grabbed the microphone and he began to put over Buddy Matthews. At first, though, he accidentally called him Buddy Murphy. And he quickly corrected himself. He realized what he had done. So he told him that he has admired him from afar. He told him that he and Brody King, they don't need to be a follower for anyone. He said he could see him holding tag team gold or singles gold if he worked hard enough. And if he ever needed a man in his corner, he would be there for him. And Ospreay offered his hand for a handshake, and Matthews accepted. So that was a nice moment. And you know, he put him over there at the end, even though he won the match. He gave him the ring. Ospreay left the ring. The fans were chanting Buddy. So this was their way, even in defeat, in trying to put Buddy Matthews over. Now, is it going to amount to anything? Probably not. Again, unfortunately, we're at a point now in this company where when it comes to a lot of these undercard talents, who they should be doing more with, and I'd like to see them featured more on TV, you kind of get your hopes up, and then you get let down. I'm not getting my hopes up about anything here. But if you're wondering why, what was the purpose of this? Like, why are they going to split him away from the House of Black? Are they going to really give him a push? Is Malakai Black going to be upset that Ospreay maybe is trying to drive these guys away from him? That was my first thought. But then I saw that Fightful Select had a report earlier tonight that those they have spoken with in AEW are of the belief, now this is not confirmation of anything, but those they have spoken to in AEW are of the belief that Malakai Black was finishing up with AEW if he has not already done so. And they did not clarify if he would be appearing on TV again for the company. Now, we have heard these rumors and reports now. It feels like, I don't know, it's like every 2 or 3 months, 4 months, we hear some Malakai Black rumor about him going back to WWE and or asking out of his contract, or his contract is expiring. And then inevitably, he puts a video out on social media where, you know, he's not ranting and screaming, but you could tell he's just very annoyed that people are talking. When I feel, honestly, the way that AEW has been using him, if I were him, I would just be happy people are talking about me at all. Because it's not as if they have featured him in any sort of meaningful story in quite some time. He's a very bizarre case. When I look back on him, and we could talk about a whole bunch of different people. You could talk about Miro. I mean, you know, the list is long of just very weird cases of guys that came over from WWE, had a lot of potential, And then you ask yourself, where did it all go wrong in AEW? Like, what the hell happened? Malakai would be at the top of that list. Although Miro is a very curious case, too. Malakai came into the company, and he was pushed right out of the gate. He was put over Cody Rhodes. Okay, he made a huge impact when he first debuted. And you really thought, this guy is a future AEW World Champion. I remember at the time I was talking about mapping out the next 2 years of AEW World title holders. And he was on my list. Because I just thought it's inevitable that at some point, it might take a year, it might take a while, he's going to be an AEW World Champion. And then at some point in the last year, year and a half, I came to the realization there's no fucking way that's going to happen. It's just never going to happen. Now, he was hurt for a while. He had a bad back injury, but that was a long time ago. So he has made it very clear he's not hurt. He hasn't been dealing with any kind of injury issues. He's been healthy. And he would get very annoyed that people would be asking questions when it was very bizarre that he was not in a singles match for months and months and months. And then finally, he started doing some singles matches. But Tony Khan was using him exclusively as a trios wrestler. And Malakai Black is somebody who can deliver for Tony Khan, in this case, in a variety of ways. But as a single star, there is a lot of potential there. There is a lot of money to be made with somebody like that, I think, in a singles role. He could be a singles champion in this company. And it just felt like Tony never saw him that way. He was largely protected, but never really pushed, is the best way I could describe it. Not that he was undefeated and has never been beaten, but he was pretty protected. I would say he was protected more than most, but never seriously pushed outside of that opening feud with Cody. And I don't understand why. It doesn't make any sense to me. But it's clear as day that if he does stick around in AEW, I mean, he's just going to be stuck spinning his wheels. And honestly, the best thing for him, if he, you know, I can't imagine that he is thrilled in the position that he's in. And that's just me. I don't know. I can't get in the man's head. But assuming that he is somebody who is motivated and driven and has goals, as many wrestlers do, right? Very goal-oriented. They want to be high up on the card, or they want to be fighting for championships, because when you fight for championships, yes, it's a television show, but when you're fighting for championships, especially world championships, you're going to be higher up on the card, right? Why wouldn't he want to be higher up on the card? I refuse to believe that he is happy as a pig in shit with the position that he is in this company. If this report is true and he really is exiting the company, it's for the better. It's for the better because clearly he has reached his ceiling in AEW. Not because he doesn't have the talent to do more, because Tony Khan just doesn't have a spot for him. And if Tony Khan doesn't have a spot for him, and he's not getting any younger, then he should leave and go somewhere else. And I could absolutely see him back in WWE. Clearly, Triple H was a big fan of his when he was in NXT. And I think that Triple H could definitely use a guy like him. You could plug him into a variety of roles. Not even sure if he'll be a world heavyweight champion, but at least he would be doing something. So if this is true, I hope it happens. And me personally, I would love to see him back in WWE under a new administration get a second lease on life, because it's just very clear to me, if he's just stuck doing the House of Black, it's a waste of his talent. He could be doing a lot more than that. And for Brody King and Buddy Matthews, this is an opportunity for them as well, because Buddy Matthews, a tremendous talent. In the House of Black, okay, but it feels like he's kind of held back by that. Brody King, they've been using Brody King a lot more than Buddy Matthews in a singles role. But Brody King, 2 years in a row, he was in the Continental Classic. If they are going to go their separate ways, and I kind of feel like they should, I don't think they need to be a tag team. I think you could do singles with them, although they make a hell of a team. But if they split them up, I think Brody and Julia Hart, I feel like they would stick together. Buddy, I could see going off and doing his own thing, but I would see Brody and Julia still being together in some form or fashion. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. You know, this is the report that was out tonight. It sounds credible. We've heard this before from other places. It turned out not to be true. So always, read these things with a grain of salt. But I don't see how anybody could be shocked by this if it turns out to be true. Just like I wouldn't be shocked if we heard the same thing about Miro or Keith Lee, who's had injury issues, and any number of people. You know, at some point, you just look at it and go, maybe it's time to just part ways and go their separate ways. And that's how I feel about Malakai Black. Now we have Private Party, the AEW World Tag Team Champions, who do not make very many appearances on this television show. In fact, I don't think they've wrestled a single time on Dynamite since they won the tag team titles from the Young Bucks. And that was the end of October. It is now almost mid-January, if you can believe it. I mean, it's the 8th, but before you know it, it's going to be mid-January. But here they were, tag team champions on Dynamite. They come out, they're celebrating their successful first title defense on Collision this past weekend. And they're on stage, they're out there now with a whole group of ladies. I don't know where they befriended these ladies. Perhaps they are locals. Maybe they were hitting up the local clubs and they said, hey, why don't you come with us? We'll put you on TV. But they had a group of girls with them. And they come out on stage and they have this whole setup like a club. And they have the red velvet rope and they have the security guard. So Isaiah Cassidy says it's time to celebrate. They got shots, they got drinks, right? They're ready to celebrate. Out comes the Hurt Syndicate. And we have MVP, Bobby Lashley, and Shelton Benjamin. And they come out on stage. They step over the velvet rope. MVP says he wants to raise a toast to Private Party. Bobby Lashley also, he raises his shot glass and he says, here's to the Hurt Syndicate, taking those tag team titles. And Isaiah Cassidy, when he heard that, he didn't like that very much. So MVP, Lashley, and Shelton, they all poured their shots out. What a waste of liquor. And they start to make their way down to the ring because Lashley has a match coming up. And so Private Party were just left on stage, just standing there. And that was the last that we saw of them. So a rare Private Party appearance here on the show, and it wasn't in a match. It's to set up clearly what is going to be a future match. And honestly, if this is going to be a future match for those tag team titles, it doesn't bode well for Private Party. But I'll talk about that. Let's talk about this match first. Bobby Lashley. He went one-on-one. First time ever. Bobby Lashley against Mark Briscoe. This was not a squash. They gave Briscoe some hope spots here. Lashley right away hit a spinning sit-out dominator for an ear fall. Briscoe battled back. He hit some redneck kung fu. Jumped off the top rope into the clutches of Lashley. And he got launched to the floor. And then Lashley went out and steamrolled him with a pounce. After a break, Briscoe mounted a comeback. He got cut off, though, as Lashley hit a tackle, sent him hard off the... I mean, he took a hell of a bump back first off the apron. Lashley went out after him, but didn't realize that Briscoe had gone underneath the ring, and he popped Lashley with a chair, unbeknownst to the referee, and then followed with a springboard dive. MVP is on commentary, and he is flipping out. He cheated. This should be a disqualification. How is this allowed? So Briscoe hit a corkscrew moonsault from the top to the floor outside, and then inside hit the froggy bow. Bobby Lashley kicks out. Lashley dodged a corner charge, hit the spear, hit a huge spine buster, and then applied the hurt lock for the submission win. After the match, Shelton Benjamin and Lashley, they attacked Briscoe until Private Party. They sprinted out with chairs. They had a little bit of a face-off, and then the Hurt Syndicate retreated. So like I said, they gave Briscoe some hope spots here, but, I mean, the outcome was never in doubt. The Hurt Syndicate, noticeably, still getting more cheers than boos, even though they are being positioned very much as heels on this show. The fans, they don't hate these guys. They like cheering for them. This continues to be a consistent... I don't even want to say problem, but it continues to be a consistent pattern, no matter where they are, no matter what building or city they may be in, you just hear more cheers than boos for the Hurt Syndicate. But are they going to take the tag team titles off of Private Party already? That was my question coming out of this, because if they're building to Shelton Benjamin and Bobby Lashley as a tag team, and they get Private Party in a match, now maybe they don't just make the match, maybe they have some, I mean, look, they love doing gauntlets. Tony Khan loves his gauntlet matches. It would not shock me if 2 weeks from now, we get another gauntlet. We had a men's gauntlet tonight. We have a women's one next week. Would not shock me if we got a tag team gauntlet or some kind of match, and then Lashley and Shelton, they win, and then by virtue of that win, they get a title match. If they get a title match, they're winning the titles. And it sucks for Private Party, because if that's how this goes, if they defend their titles once or twice successfully and then lose them to Lashley and Benjamin, while that would be great for, you know, Shelton Benjamin and Bobby Lashley, boy, would that be fucking terrible for Private Party. I mean, these guys just never had a chance. So, I mean, it's nice they're building up a program for them, but I don't think this is going to end well for them at all. And if they just turn around and take the belts off them, I mean, that's just, it's just a failure of creative. It's a failure of the tag team division right now. That after 5 years, you built a little story for these guys, that it took 5 years, but finally they win the tag team titles, only to take the titles off of them 3 months later. Now, 3 or 4 months, it's not like it's a week, but you gotta, you know, context is important here. It's not like they've had a lot of successful title defenses. It's not like we get to see them on the main show every single week. Perception is everything, and the perception of these guys right now, who are your tag team champions, is that they don't belong in that position. People don't look at them the way they look at the Bucks or FTR or any of these other teams, because you have not taken the time to build them up. You have not taken the time to build up their credibility to try to get people to look at them that way. They never had a chance. Putting the belts on them, it's not like the belts are going to make the man. I mean, that might be the idea here, but it's not working. So for their sake, I hope it doesn't just end like that. But I just don't see there being any other outcome if they go into that match. They do that match in a few weeks. I mean, that's it. It's game over for Private Party. I'm sorry. I don't see it going any other way for those two. Now, speaking of gauntlets, we had the Casino Gauntlet match up next, with the winner getting an AEW World Championship match on the Maximum Carnage edition of Dynamite, which is next week. So, January 15th. And with his win last week in the three-way match against Swerve Strickland and Roderick Strong, Switchblade Jay White got to enter here at number one, which is important because in these gauntlet matches, the first fall wins it. It's not a situation where we got 10 guys and the gauntlet doesn't officially start, you know, like a rumble or something until all 10 men have been called, or like a War Games match, right? It doesn't work that way. First fall, pinfall or submission, and you win the gauntlet. So you want to be number one. The earlier you enter, the better your chances are going to be. So Jay White was out first, and then second was Hangman Adam Page. What a coincidence. How about that? Hangman comes in after Jay White. So they traded chops and punches. Hangman hit a shoulder block, covered him for a one count only. And then he went for a fallaway slam. He got cradled for a two count. And then they traded some reversals on some big moves, and White hit a superplex. Both men were down, and now we get the countdown. I don't know what the intervals were. They weren't very long. Maybe 2 minutes. So we got the countdown for the next competitor, which was your favorite, Wheeler Yuta. Wheeler Yuta has had more pay-per-view main event appearances than most of the names I mentioned before, like a Malachi Black and people who came over to this company who you thought would end up in the main event scene. Wheeler Yuta has had technically more appearances during AEW pay-per-view main events than those guys have. Sickening. Yuta comes in. Now, think about this. Yuta is part of the Death Rider. So if Wheeler Yuta wins this gauntlet, he challenges Jon Moxley for the AEW World Championship next week. I assume the idea here is that he would lay down for him. You know, he's in there to try to give the Death Riders a win so they could basically get out of this title match next week. The announcers didn't articulate that, but I assume that's the idea with him being in this match. So he's the man who cost Jay White the AEW World title at World's End. As soon as he gets into the ring, Jay White drops him with a Blade Runner. Had him pinned. Hangman, though, comes over and breaks up the fall. Hangman lands a fallaway slam followed by a lariat in the corner. White fires back with a big chop, and then he delivers springboard lariats to Yuta. The countdown begins. We get our next competitor into the match. We hear Swerve Strickland's theme song. Whose house? And then it transitions into Ricochet's theme music. So we had the little fake out there. Ricochet was out next. And last week was the best thing they've done yet with Ricochet. Because after all the mocking and people making fun of him, especially Swerve, he got his revenge and he left Swerve Strickland a bloody mess. He looked like a psychopath out there. He's cackling at himself, blood, not even his blood, but blood all over his face, his white shirt, you know, dress shirt. So it was a great angle last week. Exactly what they needed to do with him coming out coming out of World's End when he lost in the Continental Classic to Okada and then was, of course, draped in toilet paper. Now, he was also on the Wrestle Dynasty card this weekend. He was in the main event. He headlined the Tokyo Dome against Zack Sabre Jr. He was unsuccessful. That show also only had 16,000 people in the Tokyo Dome. So, of course, people now are joking. Well, that's what happens when you put Ricochet in the main event of the Tokyo Dome. Of course, Kenny Omega was on that show, too. So, you got to be fair. But anyway, so Ricochet comes out, and he's out there doing Ricochet things. Not a lot happened. Adam Cole is out next. And the biggest thing that he did here was hit a Panama Sunrise to Ricochet. Before we got the next entrant, the TNT champion, Daniel Garcia, who was out to what I wrote here. I just wrote two words, negative pop. Like, you know what a pop is. What is the antithesis? What is the opposite of a pop? It's a negative pop. It's no reaction. That's what Daniel Garcia, the TNT champion, got when he came out. Powerhouse Hobbs was out next. He did not get a negative pop. He launched Ricochet to the outside, and he's ragdolling anybody in his path. He's ragdolling guys. Hangman mocked him, and so Hobbs threw him just clear across the ring. And so before they go into a commercial break, Hobbs is in firm control of this match. Into the gauntlet next, we had Roderick Strong. And he dishes out some backbreakers to almost everybody. Ricochet finds himself surrounded and beaten down by Cole, Strong, and Daniel Garcia. Everybody starts hitting big moves. Jay White wanted a Blade Runner, but again, as with World's End, Wheeler Yuta steals a win away from him with a low blow. Number 9, the Murder Hawk Monster, Lance Archer, who never wins anything. But he's a big, scary-looking guy, so he comes out and Wheeler Yuta does a dive out to the floor, but Archer is there waiting for him. And Archer, of course, I mean, outweighs him by probably 100 fucking pounds. So here comes Yuta out of the ring. He grabs him by the throat on the way down, choke slams him hard onto the ring apron. Archer kept up the choke slams inside the ring and then took turns chucking Ricochet back and forth with Powerhouse Hobbs. We got chance of meat from the crowd. And the two big men, they went back and forth. They were selling power slams and boss man slams. Kyle O'Reilly entered at number 10, again, to a negative pop. Nobody cared. O'Reilly comes out. He beats the hell out of Yuta on stage. Because as soon as he came out of the tunnel, Wheeler was there, so he's battering him with kicks. And the Undisputed Kingdom, which now had three members in this match, were using their strength in numbers until Jeff Jarrett, the Last Outlaw, who on this television show last week told us that he had re-signed what will be his final talent contract with AEW. Final talent contract of his career. And he wants to be the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. If he wins this gauntlet, he will get his title match against Jon Moxley next week. But you had to know that wasn't going to happen because they're doing the long story with Jeff Jarrett. This is their John Cena now. So they weren't going to blow this off in 2 weeks. But he comes out at number 11 and he was immediately, before he could even get into the ring and get his jacket off, he is immediately attacked by Wheeler Yuta in the aisle. And you wonder if that's under orders from Jon Moxley. So they fought off through the curtain to the back. They cut back to the ring, and the match continues. So Jarrett never actually got into the match. But that left Archer and Garcia to fend off the Undisputed Kingdom until Hobbs just ran through them all. Archer wanted a blackout on Hobbs. He wiggled free, sent Archer to the outside. Kyle fired off kicks. He ran into a big-time spinebuster, though, and that allowed Powerhouse Hobbs to pick up the win. The surprise win. We didn't even know who else was going to be in the fucking match anyway. All we knew was that Jay White was number one and Jeff Jarrett was going to be in it. That's all we knew. So I didn't even know if Hobbs was going to necessarily be in the match. And even when I saw that he was, I didn't think he was going to win, but he did. And that was refreshing. Now, Renee climbed into the ring to immediately when the match was over. She climbs into the ring to interview Hobbs. And she asks him what it means to get a shot at the title next week. And Hobbs said that Moxley is the man who brought him into AEW, right? He just wants to shoot straight. John Moxley is the one responsible for him being in this company. But next week, he plans on shocking the world. But not only that, he's going to make John Moxley his bitch. And you should have seen the look on Renee's face. She was so thoroughly offended and disgusted by this as she walked away. The gauntlet itself, I thought, was fine. I didn't have as much fun with this one as I have some of the past ones they've done. But it's a great concept. The way they do it, the format, generally, it's a fun match. Like I said, I didn't think this was as good as some of the other ones they've done. They gave them a lot of time, though. They gave this 25 minutes. And we had 11 people called out, which is a pretty decent number. But for Hobbs, I say good for him. To me, I was happy to see him, or someone like him, someone who I feel should be doing a lot more on this show and isn't, being the one to get the nod here. So I like that. And now he's headed for a rematch with John Moxley, because the last time they set foot in the ring together was in April of last year. They had an IWGP world title match on Dynamite. This was right after Moxley beat Naito, I think in Chicago, to win the IWGP title. And he defended the title against, it might have been a Daly's Place now that I think about it, but he defended the title against Hobbs. And in that match, Hobbs came charging into the corner. And just the way his knee, I guess, hit the bottom turnbuckle, I think it was, he hurt his knee. And it was clear as day that he was in pain, like something was wrong. And the match ended shortly thereafter. And then he was gone. And he missed a very long time before he came back in November. So what we need, and they did mention this on commentary, but so what? Like, you've got a week now to promote this match. That's all you got. And what we need is a promo from Hobbs on Collision this weekend, because that's all we have time for. We need a promo from him on Collision that brings up the fact that John Moxley, you may have brought me into this company, and I have all the respect in the world for what you've done in the past. What you've done lately, though, I have no respect for. But the last time you and I shared a ring, I got hurt. You hurt me. You cost me 7 months of my career last year. So now I'm coming for your championship. I'm costing you your title. That would be the gist of it. But I think we need something like that, because that's the story. You have a personal hook there, right? They had a match. He got hurt. And look at all the time he missed. And that's really all the time you have for as far as any kind of story. But I hope they take the chance on Collision this weekend to tell that story. We all know he's going in there to lose. Nobody expects, I don't care what you say, nobody honestly deep down in your heart believes for a second that Powerhouse Hobbs is going to win that championship next week. Okay, I don't wear a hat here on this show. If I wore a hat, I would eat it. Okay, I would eat my hat. If he wins the title on Dynamite next week, it's not happening. So, unfortunately, we already have the predictable outcome here. I mean, look, this is a guy who couldn't beat the international champion at the last pay-per-view. So what makes you think he's going to go in there and beat the AEW world champion here, a couple months later? All he has to do, though, is go out there, have a good showing. I don't know what kind of match these two are going to have. With Moxley, it's hit or miss. A lot of it depends on who he's in the ring with. His Death Rider stuff has been absolute just fucking garbage. I still think it sucks. It's boring. And I'm waiting for something to happen. Whatever that is. Cope and Mox. I guess that's what we're going to be getting soon. But something's got to give. Something's got to change here. So whatever kind of match they're going to have, Hobbs needs to go in there and have a good showing. And what they need to do, if they're smart, is they will spin another story off of this for him so that it isn't just a case where he goes in there, okay, yeah, he wrestled the champion, but he lost. And that's it. That's it. We don't see Hobbs on this show again. He's back to collision duty, and we'll see him wrestling, you know, fucking John Skyler or something. You know? Like, there has to be, and I don't know who it would be with. Take your pick. I mean, there's any number of people on the roster he could work with, but there's got to be some kind of a story for him coming out of this to at least keep him in the mix. Him going in there and having a title match with Jon Moxley, losing and then vanishing again, does nothing for him. Nothing. It would be death. So I hope they give him an opportunity to do something that will try to elevate him at least to that next level from where he is right now. It's the best I can hope for, because he's not winning the championship. But at least give him something to do going forward. Yeah, there were people who, when the Hurt Syndicate formed, said that Hobbs would be a great addition to the Hurt Syndicate. Yeah, I mean, it would work. He would play second fiddle to Bobby Lashley automatically. But out of that, you could potentially build to an eventual Lashley and Hobbs match. Like, yeah, you could do that. But I don't even necessarily think he needs to be part of a faction. Right? He's an ass kicker. Just keep pushing him like that. But he's got to have people to work with. I don't just mean squash matches. He's got to have, like, stories and programs that he can be involved in. That's my only hope for him coming out of the match next week. But I was pleasantly surprised to see him pick up the win here. Now, as Hobbs was leaving, Jeff Jarrett walked back out, and it was too late. The match is over. Sorry, Double J. You get no title match next week. Hobbs put his hand out, though. The two of them shook hands, but Jarrett kept walking to the ring. The camera followed him as he entered the ring. And then after a quick video that they aired hyping next week's match between Hook and Christian Cage, they came back and Jarrett was in the ring with Ian Riccaboni. And I didn't mention this before. Ian Riccaboni, I thought, did a great job tonight. Ian Riccaboni is the one who I think should be in that lead announcer position on this show. Now, I know Excalibur is their guy. He's been there since day one. I don't even know if Ian wants the spot. I know he didn't want the spot on Collision because he's got a shoot job and he wants the weekend to be with his family. So maybe he doesn't even want it, but he's great. And I enjoy his commentary more than Excalibur. Excalibur can be very, very grating on my nerves. Ian Riccaboni does a tremendous job. I wish he was in that spot on this show, but at least we got him for 1 week. So Riccaboni is in the ring, and he says they were all hoping for the storybook ending tonight in Tennessee, a state where Jarrett's family put professional wrestling on the map. And Jarrett said, it's 2025, and the last outlaw has to ask one question. Does he still have what it takes to climb that mountain? And before he could continue or answer his own question, he was interrupted by MJF's music. And MJF got in the ring and he called Ian a Bible-thumping prick and told him to get out of his ring. So off he went. Then he introduced himself. He said, you know, I don't think that you and I have been properly introduced. And he said that he is the greatest AEW world champion of all time. And he says that he wants his Triple B back, but the world title scene right now seems to be a lot of hard work. He said Powerhouse Hobbs is the number one contender because of Jarrett's failure tonight. Couldn't get the job done because he got beaten up by, he goes, checks notes, Wheeler Yuta, and you could hear people in the crowd laugh because it is obscene, okay, that anybody would be viciously attacked by Wheeler Yuta, so he mocked him for that. Then you've got Adam Copeland, he said, and Christian Cage and Hangman Page, and none of these men are worthy of holding his Triple B. But he can think of one man who just might be. A man that has beaten some of the biggest icons in this sport, a 12-time world champion, a 2-time Hall of Famer, Double J, Jeff Jarrett, J-E-F-F, J-A-R-R-E-T-T. Good old Double J. Not that he knew any of that personally, he said. He had to Google it because he's not a dinosaur. But kudos. He said his dad, MJF's dad, told him that he was a big fan of Jarrett's when he was a little kid. And he knows that Jarrett said that he wants to be a world champion, but with him signing that last contract, he said the clock is ticking. He then revealed that the contract, he heard that the contract that Jarrett signed is only for 1 year. And it's not a case where he wanted to sign a 1-year deal, but rather that's all that pro wrestling thinks he's got left to give. But hey, he's just telling the truth. He's not here to piss off Double J. I'm not here to piss you off, Double J. He's here to help him. The way he sees it, he's only got 1 year to prove that he still got it. 1 year to make sure that he proves himself and makes it back to the top of the mountain, and he can help him do that. All he asks is one tiny little favor. When he helps him procure his Triple B, he's first in line for a title shot. And he says, so, you want to make a deal. Now, we just heard from MJF last week on the show when he said that he's finally done with Adam Cole, thank God, and he wants his Triple B back and he's going to go after the world championship. So I guess, so this is the way, I guess, that he plans on getting. Now, why though? Why would he need Jeff Jarrett to get back his world title? I assume it's just a case of him saying, well, I don't need him, but if he's going to challenge for the title, I may as well double my chances of becoming champion and buddy up to this guy. And so if he happens to beat me to the punch, I can get him to guarantee me being the first person in line for a title shot. Then I guess that would make sense if that's the idea here. Jarrett said that MJF was the AEW World Heavyweight Champion, the longest reigning one of all time, but he's still too young to understand that you learn a lot more from your failures than you do from your successes. But that doesn't mean that he'll get there again. He said around here, they call kids like MJF one-hit wonders. He said he knows the road he's got to go down. He's been at rock bottom. Life, not just the wrestling business, life, he said, has put him at rock bottom. But that gives him the chance to scratch and claw his way back to the top of the mountain. Tonight, MJF had the chance to enter the casino gauntlet. But instead, he chose to come out here to scheme and connive. He's been on top 12 times, and he's looking for number 13 in 2025. And like that old expression goes, what a difference a year can make. He said he's sure going to make the most out of 2025, so it comes down to this. He doesn't need MJF, and he's not buying what he's selling. And then he called him an entitled prick, and Jarrett left the ring. I can't believe that we have John Cena and Jeff Jarrett more or less doing the same story here in 2025. We just had John Cena on TV on Monday night talking about how, guys, I don't think I can win number 17, right? I'd love to, but I don't think it's going to happen. Unless, of course, I can go in the Royal Rumble and win the Royal Rumble, right? So now he's going to go in the Royal Rumble. They just kicked off on Monday night the story of him going after number 17. And then 48 hours later, we have this promo from Jeff Jarrett. I mean, granted, he cut the first promo last week, but he's doing the same thing, right? He's got 1 year left. That's it. 1 year, just like Cena. This is it. He does it now or never. He wants to hold gold. He's had 12 times world champion. He needs number 13. It's the same story. Now with John Cena, John Cena is a much bigger star, obviously. And he's got, Jarrett's got 10 years on him. I think exactly 10 years. But basically, we're getting the same story in two different companies. So as this year progresses, it'll be very interesting because you can't help but compare the two. And the Jarrett one, I think this is going to carry on for many months. Cena's going to go all year. I don't know if the Jarrett is going to milk that until December, but we'll be able to follow these two stories now and see the differences in how these two promotions and in how Triple H on one side and Tony Khan on the other, you know, take these legends and push them and craft this story around them trying to be world champion. Which one becomes world champion first between the two of them? It'd be very interesting to see how the two stories end up being different. Look, I wouldn't be surprised. Number one, I wouldn't be surprised if this is something that MJF asked for, because I'm already seeing comments about, I can't believe they have MJF doing this. Okay. I agree. This is the best thing that MJF could be involved with right now is ridiculous. Now, it's 1 week. I don't know how long they're going to drag this out for. Clearly, we're getting an MJF and Jeff Jarrett match. And I'm not even saying it's necessarily going to be a bad match. But I was so tired of MJF and Adam Cole that while I think it's ridiculous that they have now transitioned from that to this, I think because I was so ready for that to be over with, that this doesn't bother me as much, because at least we are finally getting something different with MJF. This is not what I asked for. This is not what I was hoping for and expecting. But at least it's not Adam Cole. Because I don't know that I could have taken another month or two of that story. Like, there's just no way. So at least it's something different. I didn't say it's great, but it's something different, okay? But also, Jeff Jarrett, I will say this. There is a story to be told here if Tony Khan wants to tell this story, which clearly he does. And I could see people getting behind it. Jarrett is very savvy. He's been doing this for a million years. And now he's in that elder statesman position where he knows how to go out there and get sympathy from the crowd and get the crowd to cheer for him. Like the days of him being a heel and, you know, doing the slap nuts stuff and all that, that's in the past, right? This is now babyface veteran Jeff Jarrett, Hall of Famer Jeff Jarrett, and he's smart enough to know, he's been in this business for so long, how to get the people to rally behind him. Conversely, MJF is really good at getting heat. He knows how to piss people off. He knows how to get people to hate him. And one way to do that is to heel on the legend that people want to cheer for. So I think it's a dynamic that could work here. And because of that, I think when they do the eventual match, it may actually turn out to not be a bad match, right? But again, that's not the issue. Whatever this is going to be, I hope they transition away from it quickly, because the fact that MJF, since he's come back, has been trapped in a dead feud with Adam Cole, and now he's in a program seemingly with fucking Jeff Jarrett. And to think that MJF was like the crown jewel that Tony Khan, the bidding war of 2024, right? Everybody's going to be going after MJF, and all the buzz around him, right, as we headed into last year. And where did it all go? It's like that never even happened. So then he was filming a movie role. He wasn't on television every week, but he doesn't feel like one of the top stars in the company. Talk about Kenny Omega. We talk about Will Ospreay. John Moxley, there he is 5 years later. He's still at the top of the heap. World champion fucking four times, this guy. MJF, it's like he just feels like another guy in the card, and that has to change quickly. He's got to be doing more than just this. I was encouraged last week when he finally said, hey, I think I want to get my world title back. Good. I'm surprised it took 6 months for him to remember that. But this is not what I had in mind here. But I'll keep an open mind as far as the actual match, because I think the dynamic between the two of them could work. But I can't bring myself to get excited about this Jeff Jarrett story. I just can't. You know? You want to tell that as a little side story, that's one thing. But like now he's in there with MJF, and how long is this going to go on for? It's just, you can't fake enthusiasm for something if you're not into it. But that doesn't mean that it can't work. And like I said, I'm just happy that we are done with MJF and the Undisputed Kingdom. That at least is a plus. I'll take my victories here where I can get them. It was time to cope. Are you guys ready to cope? Adam Copeland was out to the ring next by himself for a promo, and he gets in the ring and he says that while he was gone, you know, with his injury, Moxley and the Death Riders, they took out Bryan Danielson, possibly for good. They took out Darby Allin recently. They also tried to take out FTR. And it just so happens that FTR are really good, close, personal friends of his. He says that was a massive mistake. Moxley has said that guys like Orange Cassidy and Hangman and Switchblade and Darby, they don't have what it takes for the grind to be the champion. And he disagrees with that, and that no one has fought through what he has fought through just to be standing here in this ring. And he will die on that hill, he said. Well, he may die in the ring if he has another one of those dives off the top of a cage. Hopefully we never see that again. But he said he's a different animal entirely from anybody else. He goes, you're looking at a man who broke his neck in a match with Eddie Guerrero. And what did he do? He got up and he wrestled another 20 minutes and he won that match. He's a man who wrestled Malachi Black in a barbed wire steel cage match. And what did he do? He said he wrestled for another 10 minutes and then he won that match. So please, Moxley, as much as he knows how tough Moxley is, please enlighten me. What can you do to me that hasn't been done before? Death Riders music hit. They took their sweet-ass time coming through the crowd. Moxley, Yuta, Claudio, no Marina Shafir, still no Pac. But they took so long that before they could even hop over the barricade to ringside, they get ambushed from behind by FTR. So the babyfaces, for a change, set a trap. Copeland joined in on the attack and got Moxley in the ring, but then Marina Shafir did show up to distract Copeland, and then Pac showed up. We haven't seen Pac in weeks. Pac showed up. He attacked from behind. Now Copeland was all alone in the ring as Moxley slowly choked him out with the bulldog choke, and out he went. Moxley asks Marina Shafir for the plastic bag. So we're about to get yet another smothering here on AEW television. But back out comes Powerhouse Hobbs. And he takes his time. He just looks like a total badass. Coming down to the ring. So much so that the Death Riders retreat. And this is what I mean. Like, you want, perception is reality. And you want to, in the 1 week that you have, build up Hobbs to the best of your ability as someone who is just this intimidating monster who even the Death Riders really don't want to have any part of. They backed off here. They wanted no part of this, man. And that's how the segment ended. They didn't give any kind of clarity on, when they might be doing Moxley and Copeland. I have to imagine that's going to be the title match on the 15th next month in Australia. I would think Moxley is defending his title on that show, and if he is, it's going to be against Copeland. Mariah May was backstage. Pre-tape promo here. She was talking about the women's casino gauntlet match next week, and she tells all the women competing to dance like the marionettes they are before she cuts their strings and burns them alive. Might not be the best thing to be saying. Harley Cameron, she screams her way into the shot and said that she wants to give the fans an appetizer on Collision. Mariah said, look, you're not getting a title shot. And Harley said, that's fine. It could be non-title. And she said, just some hot girl graps. I like the sound of that. I'm okay with that. Don't you want some hot girl graps? I'm cool with that. So they're going to have that. They made that official for Collision this weekend. Mariah is great. I think Harley Cameron is great. I've talked about her a little bit recently. She's just got this great personality for television. Like in the ring, even. In the ring, she's perfectly fine. And she could work, but she just has this charisma to her that not a lot of people have. And I think that it will carry her very far, whether it's in this company or another company. But they should definitely be doing more with her. We don't get to see her on Dynamite very often. So it was nice to see her pop up on this show for a change. We had a three-way match with Toni Storm, Chris Statlander, and Willow Nightingale. This is fresh off the four-way that Willow was in at the Tokyo Dome at Wrestle Dynasty that she did not win. This was for the right to enter next week's Women's Casino Gauntlet match in the number one spot. They did not get nearly as much time as the Gauntlet match did, but they made the most of the time that they did have. This was good. Storm kept getting tossed out to the floor, and she finally put a stop to it with a crossbody off the top onto both women. Storm tried a sunset flip at one point on Chris Statlander. She didn't budge. And Statlander just stood there, and she starts flexing, right? She's standing there completely oblivious to the fact that Willow comes up from behind, and she delivers a slingshot. Now, Tony is still underneath Statlander's legs. Willow gives her a slingshot. And so what we got here, that sent Tony Storm face first up into Statlander's crotch for the low blow. It's the wildest low blow I've ever seen. Chris Statlander got a face full of Tony Storm down in her nether regions. Cue up the Dolph Ziggler meme. You know you're thinking it. You may as well cue it up. Cue up the Dolph Ziggler meme. Hey, OMG, I love you too. Says, I love you, Solo. I love you too. Where are we at on the likes, by the way, for Be the Booker? I don't know. It's not looking good. So Tony tried for the crossbody again, but this time she got caught. Willow and Chris, they did a double fallaway slam. Statlander tried to offer a handshake to Willow, but Storm cut them both off, and then a three-way slugfest ensued. Tony delivered a headbutt, Willow hit the discus lariat, and we got a triple down. All three ladies down on the mat. Statlander backdropped out of Storm Zero. She hit a shotgun dropkick, but as she charged in, Willow met her with a pounce out of nowhere. Tony hit the sweet cheek music to Statlander. Willow hit a cannonball on both before laying out Storm with a DVD for two. Tony avoided the chaos theory. Nightingale, though, was there to hit a double German suplex. Statlander countered the doctor bomb with a jawbreaker. Willow. Love Willow. Willow hits a German on Chris, who hits a German on Tony at the same time. Storm with a roll-up on Willow. Chris, though, breaks it up. Willow got sent out to the floor, and Statlander drops Tony Storm with Saturday Night Fever and gets the win. Now, after the match, Renee was backstage with Tony Storm, a dejected Tony Storm, who said that she gave it her all, but clearly she is not ready yet. She says that it was an honor to be in there with Statlander and Willow, but she is going to keep working hard because right now it is not Tony time, she said. Now, she was talking here like she possibly is not going to be in the gauntlet match next week. I cannot imagine that she, not only that she's not in the match, but that she doesn't win the match, because the winner of the gauntlet next week is going to get Mariah May and a shot at the women's world title in Australia at Grand Slam. How could that not be the match? Of course it's going to be the match. It's got to be Mariah May and Tony Storm. So she will be in the gauntlet next week, and I'm sure she's going to win. Look, Jay White won a triple threat match last week for the number one spot in the gauntlet match tonight. And he failed. So even though Chris Statlander won the number one spot, that doesn't mean she's winning next week. Tony Storm is going to win. She's going to go to Grand Slam. And it's one of two things. I mean, either she's going to come out of this amnesia that she's had, or I tend to think that we come to find out this was all put on. Again, this is the best performance in the career of timeless Tony Storm. And she'll probably win back the women's world title. See, I was kind of hoping they would build here in 2025 to a title match with Mariah May and Jamie Hayter. You know, maybe by like double or nothing time, because they've done nothing with Jamie Hayter. Now they have her feuding with Julia Hart. That's like the biggest thing they've done with her. She's been back since August. They have done fucking nothing with Jamie Hayter. So now you got to take your time and really kind of get her back into the mix before you could do anything with her. Yeah, there's a lot of talk about who's going to take the TBS title away from Mercedes. A lot of people have floated Athena's name. You could do that match maybe in Texas at All In. But, of course, you would have to believe that Athena is going to end up on the women's roster in AEW, which you're not fucking fooling me with that. I'll believe it when I see it. I tend to look at that and go, Jamie Hayter could be a good option for the TBS title, if not the women's world title. You could do Jamie Hayter unseating Mercedes. But you have to build to it. So They need to start doing that. The fact that Jamie Hayter, she's another example. And she's not like an ex-WWE talent. She's like an AEW original. But she's another one where she got hurt. She was gone for a very long time. And so she's now been back for months. And they've done nothing to try to heat her back up, to try to get her back to a position that she was in before. She was so over before, and now she's so cold. And I just don't know. We're in January now, and they're not doing anything to build her up for the future. So Toni Storm may well go in there and beat Mariah May next month. Even Toni Storm. Like, Toni Storm is the one who beat Jamie Hayter to win the title in the first place. You could build to Toni Storm and Jamie Hayter. But my point is, they're not doing anything to build Jamie Hayter. That should be one of Tony Khan's priorities. Not his number one priority, but that, if you made a list of like top 10 creative priorities here, like that's up there on the list, okay? She was that popular at one point that he needs to find a way to heat her back up again. This shouldn't be hard. I don't know what he's waiting for. I really don't. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Imagine you're taking your first vacation of the new year. You want to get away to a warmer climate for the winter. You're headed for parts unknown, and you ignore the flight crew as they're doing their usual safety demonstration. You don't think anything is going to happen. But what if it does? What if the worst happens, and that yellow mask, it drops down from the overhead, and you start to panic because you weren't paying attention, and you have absolutely no idea what to do? That's what it's like going online with that ExpressVPN. Most of the time, you'll probably be fine, but is it really worth the risk? I don't think so. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network in an airport, a hotel, a cafe, your online data is not secure. Any hacker on that same network can gain access to and steal your personal data. All you need is some cheap hardware. A 12-year-old can do it. Hackers make up to $1,000 per person selling your personal info on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. What makes ExpressVPN the best VPN is that it's super secure and it's super easy to use. It would take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. All you have to do is open the app, you click one button, and you're all set. It also works on all of your devices. Whenever I traveled last year, I always made sure to have ExpressVPN active on my phone to keep my important data private, which is the way it should be. That's why it's important to me. My information is not for anyone's eyes but my own. You can never be too careful. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster, and you can get an extra 4 months free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. They close the show with the return of Kenny Omega, who already had the match of the year this past weekend at Wrestle Dynasty. They had, if you didn't see that match, they had, him and Gabe Kidd had just an outstanding match. I got a full review of both shows up on the channel right now if you missed it. And if you didn't see the shows or you're not really that into New Japan, go listen to the review anyway. I'll get you caught up on everything. It was just a great match. And Kenny was in his Tokyo Dome form, his final form, and it was great to see. But he entered here to the new music that he debuted at the Tokyo Dome. He came out to new music on that show, which is not as good as his AEW music. But this one, it has kind of a, and I know he's a big fan of it, so I guess I'm not surprised. But it kind of has like a Final Fantasy vibe to it. I don't know if it has a name or anything like that, but that's the vibe it gives me. But he got a great reception. He gets in the ring, and he said that that reception is not making this any easier. But thank you. He looked very sad. Like, I'm just sitting here going, you're not fooling me with this shit. It was almost like he wanted you to think, oh my God, is he out here to announce his retirement? I'm like, I just saw the show this weekend. Like, you're not fooling me, okay? You're not fooling me. This is the same Kenny Omega. He's back. Don't give me this bullshit. Nice try. But he said it was a little over a year ago that he checked himself into the hospital and he found out that he had diverticulitis. And for those who don't know what diverticulitis is, it took 2 feet of his intestines from him. And if he hadn't checked himself into the hospital when he did, his doctor told him that he would have been dead. And that's a shoot. He was very, very sick. You could see it. Like, if you go, I'm almost positive that it was the last segment that he had on TV before he got checked into the hospital. He was doing the Golden Jets thing. Him and Jericho were going to challenge and probably win the tag team titles at World's End. So the match never happened. But they came out for a promo on Dynamite. He looked terrible. I mean, I'm not going to say, like, looking at him, I was like, oh my God, he looks like he's dying. But he did not look good at all. And if you go back, you could tell something was very wrong with him. Something was off. But nobody knew just how off it was. And it was very serious. Like, had he waited, it's very possible he wouldn't be here right now. That's how serious it was. So this year, he said, has been a roller coaster ride. But after a successful surgery, he had two questions. Number one, he asked the doctor, how long is the recovery going to be? And number two, when can I get back in the ring? And the doctor gave him a very sobering answer. The doctor said, Kenny, you'll be lucky if you just are able to return to a normal life, let alone, like, get back in the ring and wrestle. So being a pro wrestler and doing what they do, you push things a little too hard. And so he ended up back in the hospital four more times for four more weeks at a time. And he questioned, can I even do this anymore? Can I even do this anymore? And he can't lie, there was a moment where he felt like giving up was the safest option. And once he considered that option, he realized, what purpose does he even have on this planet if he doesn't have the fans with him? A few days ago, he found his purpose in Tokyo, Japan. Just like he found his purpose here tonight, and that is, if he is not in the ring every single week, giving us everything that he has, then he is just not living. So even though he might not be the same guy, this new version of Kenny Omega that is not concerned about money, he's not concerned about power, he's not concerned about revenge, he can still prove. And then he got cut off. Got cut off by Don Callis's music. Callis walked out with a microphone, says, well, look who's back from the dead. Like, he didn't even get the word dead out before Omega. He jumped out of the ring. He sprinted out of this ring. And it's a short aisleway, but sprinted out of the ring down the aisleway and got his hands on Callis until Brian Cage and Lance Archer came out to rescue him. And then they double-teamed Omega. They took him into the ring. Kyle Fletcher showed up, and so now it was 3-on-1. And Brian Cage delivered a body blow to Omega right into his previously diverticulitis-infested intestine. He just struck him right in the ribs, and the announcers sold it big. Will Ospreay's music hits. He runs out with a chair. He fights off the Callis family. And then he's standing in the ring with the chair, slowly turns to look at Omega. Omega looks at him. Ospreay drops the chair. We get a face-to-face with them in the middle of the ring. Tense standoff. And that's how they went off the air. Two men who have been wronged by Don Callis in the past. Although they didn't look united. They didn't look very happy with each other. But they very quickly, in running down the card for next week, added that Tony Khan just announced that, I guess Tony Schiavone wasn't there, so we couldn't have Schiavone. I'm being told in my ear by Tony Khan. But they said Tony Khan had relayed the message that it's going to be Kenny Omega in ring next week against Brian Cage, which is great. It's great because this is what I was hoping for. I was not so much interested in Kenny Omega coming back and then making appearances here and there. We need Omega back in the ring now. Like, he doesn't even have to wrestle every week, but we need him back in the ring now. We need to get him back in the mix now. So they're not wasting any time. He's going to be back in the ring next week against Brian Cage. I love, by the way, how he's out there saying, I'm not back for revenge. And then a moment later, he's sprinting out of the ring towards Don Callis to get his revenge on the man who wronged him. So a little bit hypocritical there, I would say. But I, you know, with that comment, though, I wasn't even thinking about Don Callis. I was thinking about the Elite. And it made me wonder if this is their way of effectively writing that off for the time being. Because you would think, like, the last time we saw him on TV, he was laid out by the Elite. They tried to kill the guy, right? Jack Perry and the Bucks and Okada. And we know we got that little tease with Okada. So clearly they're building to something with him and Okada for All In. But All In is not for another 7 months. So what do you do with him in the interim? Does he go after Jack Perry? He might. I'm not saying they won't have a match at some point. But it felt to me like this was their way of kind of getting away from that by having him say, look, I'm not here to settle scores. I'm not here for revenge. So that's why we don't see him immediately going back after the Elite. But the Elite's not there. That's the thing. Like, the Bucks aren't back yet. And when the Bucks come back, they're probably going to be babyfaces. Okada wasn't there tonight. I'm assuming Jack Perry, because he was on the Wrestle Dynasty card. I don't know if he's back in the States or not. I would imagine he is, but I mean, who gives a shit? But I wonder if that line was in there for that purpose, because they're not planning on going back to that. So let's just try to explain why Kenny Omega is not back in a fit of rage to get his revenge on Jack Perry. But it's great to have him back on TV. I think the play is. The play is not Omega and Ospreay. They wanted you to think that. The play for Grand Slam in Australia is one of two things. It's either Omega and Fletcher or a tag team match with Omega and Ospreay as a tag team against Fletcher and Konosuke Takeshita. And I'm kind of leaning towards the tag match, because otherwise I don't know what Ospreay does. So I think that's what we're headed for. It's like I said, Omega and Fletcher, I could see that, but I think we're heading for a tag team match on that show. So on the whole, I mean, I thought it was a good show tonight, better than last week. And the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway is that we have a very big star back on the show that Tony Khan has been sorely missing for a very long time. I don't like what they're doing with MJF at the moment. But I'm also going to sit here and tell you right now, like, we're going to get an MJF and Jeff Jarrett match. And I actually think when we get that match, and I don't know when they're planning on doing it, but I'll go out right now and say that even though I'm not really a huge fan of this, I actually think the match between them could be excellent. I think if they tell that story the right way and they play off, you know, the emotion where, like I said, Jarrett is very good, I think, at getting sympathy from the audience. MJF knows how to get heat. Put those two together. I think those two could end up having a great match. As good of a match as Jeff Jarrett will probably have with anybody in this company this year. So I'm not going to shit on the match, but MJF should be doing a lot more than just this. Like, it's just kind of ridiculous. The collision card this weekend, Copeland and Big Bill. So basically, Little Edge and Big Edge are going to go one-on-one. Dax Harwood is going to take on Chris Jericho, two of AEW's biggest fans. And the Women's World Champion Mariah May in a non-title match, some hot girl graps, one-on-one with Harley Cameron. Dynamite next week, Jon Moxley defends the AEW World title against Powerhouse Hobbs. Kenny Omega takes on Brian Cage. Christian Cage takes on Hook. And the Women's Casino Gauntlet for the right to challenge for the World Championship in Australia next month. So that is your Dynamite lineup for next weekend, or next week. Collision is this weekend. Dynamite is next week. What did you think of Dynamite for January 8th? 50% thumbs up, 50.3%. 49.7% thumbs down. So almost an exact even split. You can't get much closer than that. It's just very slightly thumbs up, but it's a virtual tie right now. It's within the margin of error, put it that way. Usually the margin of error is what, 3 or 4 points? We are within the margin of error. Yeah, I agree with that comment in the chat about MJF. It just feels... There was a time where he really did. He felt like the biggest thing in AEW. And like, just... there would be a potential bidding war because he was that big of a star for them, and now he's not. And I shouldn't say he's not, but he doesn't feel that way. you know, and him being away for a while didn't help. But that feeling that was there before, you know, for MJF, it's not there right now. And they need him to get that back very quickly. Because it ain't there right now. But you're only as good as the people you work with. You're only as good as the ideas they have for you. Has nothing to do with his talent. He's got all the talent in the world, but what they have him doing right now is not exactly lighting the world on fire. All right, let's take a look at your super chats. We are still short of the goal for Be the Bookers, so you got to get those likes up if we're going to do it tonight. We'll see where we end up. Luis is actually starting us off tonight. For PW Insider, NXT will air tonight at 8 p.m. on KTLA. Boy, do KTLA's phone reps suck giving out information over the phone. I wouldn't know, Luis, because I don't have KTLA. I'm in New York. Rizzo with the $10 super chat. Happy every 6 months Malakai Black is leaving AEW rumor of the day. I feel like every 6 months or so this rumor trends, so maybe someday they'll be right. I think they might be right this time. Joseph says, hey Solo, sending much appreciation. You rock. Thank you, Joseph. Dev to Dust, what are your thoughts on Mets player David Wright? Kind of a random question. David, I think you might be right. I might enjoy that one more. Dev to Dust, though. David Wright was a great player for the Mets. I thought he was a great ambassador and still is a great ambassador for the team. It's too bad he had the injury issues that he had because he could have done even better. But I think he was a quality player, and I think he was a credit to the Mets. There he is, David Thiering. Our response to this super chat and to Hulk Hogan is... Yes, then the subsequent booing. And then David says, we went from Solo's CEO dance last week to the Hulkster getting booed to the fisting ritual to Goldberg on TNT being created. Boy, we have circled the wagons this week. There's been quite a few memorable moments. You never know what you're going to get. It's all unplanned. It just happens. Right? The best stuff happens on the fly when you least expect it. That's when you get the gold. Pro Wrestling Fan 1995 with 31 months of membership. AEW has stepped up their game weekly TV-wise, and I don't know if it's true, but it's been reported that Malakai Black is leaving AEW. I wonder if he is heading back to WWE. If he is leaving AEW, then he is almost surely headed back to WWE at some point. I can't imagine he doesn't go back. And I can't imagine that Triple H wouldn't love to have him back. Just like if Samoa Joe became available. But Triple H wouldn't love to get his hands on Samoa Joe. Alex with the 25. Brother Solo with the new... M. Mills. Activating Bree Mode. We had M. Mills on TNT with us last night as well. Here she is again tonight. M. Mills, thank you very much. I hope you are having a great night. But Alex says, with the numerous fires out here in L.A., to be able to distract ourselves for a couple of hours with your stream is a great feeling. Much love, as always, and stay strong, L.A. Alex, stay safe wherever you may be. I don't know how close you are to where things are happening, Ground Zero over there, but it's very scary. And yes, if this could be an escape for a couple of hours, then I'm happy for that. David says, just wanted to send a shout out to those in this chat living in California right now dealing with the wildfires. Stay safe, everyone. I echo that. Chris Lloyd, I wonder if they're going to take their time getting to Tony Against Mariah Part 2. Tony can easily play it off as she's excited to have her first title match. They might play it out, but I do think, though, this whole amnesia thing, if that's what it is, like, you can't play it out for too long. At some point, you're going to jump the shark with it, and it just gets old. So maybe she doesn't win in Australia, although I like the idea of it being a swerve where she knows exactly what she's doing. And then we get the big reveal and, you know, she wins. If she's going to win the belt back, she wins the belt back there because she's from Australia and it would be a great moment. And I think it would be a cool payoff if that's kind of the little twist on what she's doing. But if they wanted to drag it out until like Dynasty in April or, you know, Revolution in March, I mean, that's fine. But, like, you're not going to push it all the way to Texas with this angle unless there's some big development in the angle. Like, this is nice and fun to follow right now, but a few months from now, it's just going to be like, can we get on with this? Pro Wrestling Fan 1995, Moxley against Hobbs next week should be good, but we all know what the outcome will be because it all leads to Cope and Mox at Revolution for the AEW World title. See, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about Revolution. I think it could be the Grand Slam main event, and then they do Darby at Revolution. I'm sticking to that. I think it's Mox and Darby at Revolution. Also, because I don't want to wait until Revolution to get this Copeland and Moxley match. Like, I'm already like, all right, come on, let's get on with it, you know? And we're still a month away from Grand Slam. You really want to wait 2 months for us to get to Revolution? Because I don't. Unregistered hypercam. Why don't promoters use BS in real life drama for good storytelling fuel? Isn't the point of wrestling business to entertain the fans for their money? Oh, backstage. I thought you were saying bullshit. A lot of the backstage drama is bullshit. Well, look, Tony Khan used some backstage drama to pop a number in April with CM Punk and Jack Perry. He popped a big number. He hasn't come anywhere close to that number since. Sometimes the drama backstage is better left backstage. Sometimes it's cool to play off of it, like Bret and Shawn. You could feel the tension between them every time they were on TV. That was fun. Maybe not for the people who had to work with them at that time, but that was fun. But there's backstage drama that belongs backstage and not out on camera. AEW has had enough drama for the last 2 years. We don't need to create more. Oz and Glorious, Malakai, House of Black, sell more merch and are more interesting in 1 week than Garcia will be his entire career. Malakai crossed or annoyed Tony Khan at some point, no doubt. There's something that happened, and I don't know what it was. I don't know what it is. It just doesn't make sense. The thing that really struck me, it was one of the videos that Malakai posted when he was annoyed that people were talking about how he's hurt. That's why he's not in singles matches. So he had to post a video and said, look, he was trying to be nice about it, but he was clearly just pissed off and frustrated. And he goes, I'm not hurt. Oh, look, there. Look at this. Two best friends. On your screen right now. But he was clearly annoyed and he said, look, I'm not hurt. And as far as why I don't have more singles matches, his answer was basically like, I'm not the guy to ask about that. And that's what made me go, okay, all right. Like, he's speaking volumes without actually saying it. So, yes, I agree. Something happened at some point. I don't know what. I don't know why. But clearly, he is not going to go any higher than he is right now. So, that much is clear. Because if he was going to, it would have happened by now. We got Oz and Glorious again. Says, sometimes, Tony Khan's like a guy with a garage full of Italian supercars that prefers to drive a modded out Toyota Camry with racing stripes just to prove a point. That's quite the analogy there. BCOM, see clearly. What Speedball Mike Bailey match would you recommend besides the one with Ospreay? Been watching more Speedball lately. He's great. Sucks. He's on TNA. Well, you'll be happy to know he's no longer with TNA. He is out of TNA as of the beginning of November, and I think, I don't know if it was a non-compete or what, but I think he's officially free and clear now, and the belief is he's on his way into AEW. So yes, he is no longer with TNA. We had Speedball in House of Glory a bunch of times, and he had some great matches there. The one I'll recommend to you, though, is the match he had with Takeshita at the Maple Leaf Pro Show. Scott D'Amore's new promotion, they had their debut weekend in October. They haven't done shows since. But they had two shows up in Canada the weekend of, I think, October 19th and 20th. And Takeshita was in the main event both nights. Night one, he, I believe, defended his international title against Speedball. And then night two, he defended against Josh Alexander, who's also going to be, if he's not already, a free agent and out of TNA. Both matches were great. The Speedball match, I think I like more. Great match. So you want a recommendation? Go find that match. Maple Leaf Pro, what was it? Forged in Combat, I think was the name of the show. That was a great one. And Oz says, Private Party had one good match 5 years ago. When you're not given the opportunity, brother, it's hard to do much there. You got to be featured. You got to be featured in the ring with the best tag teams in the company. And it's not just the Young Bucks. At the time, you know, you had the Lucha Bros, you got FTR, you got SCU at one point, and Best Friend. You had all these teams. You had LAX, Proud and Powerful, whatever they were. Where was Private Party and all that? Part of the problem is that Mark Quinn got hurt. He was gone for a very long time, like a year or over a year. And so Isaiah started doing some goofy stuff with the Hardys and, you know, the Matt Hardy gimmick and everything. And it really stifled their momentum and their growth. That was part of it also. It wasn't just the booking. It was the injury, but the booking was definitely part of it. So, you know, I've had the chance to see Private Party call their matches. I know where they came from. I know what they're capable of. I know what they can do. And I'm not saying I'm going to rank Private Party as the greatest team on the AEW roster. What I'm saying is, though, to insinuate that, well, they weren't worth investing in, or they had matches that weren't great and that's why they didn't get pushed. They never got the opportunity to really get pushed. It took 5 years for them to really get the chance to finally not just win the titles, but okay, now we're being featured in a prominent way. And I don't hold that against them. I hold that against Tony Khan. Because if they were featured prominently and had matches with all these other great teams and they were having stinkers every week or just like average matches, it's like, okay, maybe it's not them, it's you. But they really weren't given the opportunity, but the injury played a role too. Arabian Knight says, per WrestleVotes and WrestleNomics, Raw on Netflix only drew 600,000 live viewers in the U.S. That seems low. Also, could you see Keith Lee joining the Hurt Syndicate? I don't see him joining. Is that true? 600,000 live? That sounds like a fucking awful number. I'll have to look into this. But yeah, on the surface, that does not sound good at all. Clay V-Man 07, Tekken added Final Fantasy 16's Clive as DLC to get Soken's music. And now AEW brought Kenny back to get Soken's music. Are you going to hate me if I tell you I have no idea who Soken is? I mean, I know he did the music that Kenny comes out to, but is that a band? Is that a guy? Is that a girl? I don't know. I don't know. I'm not familiar with their music. I don't know who that is, so go easy on me. But I don't know who Soken is. Styles Fan 619, buy or sell, Charles Mason or Vince Russo? Is it true that Noah Mark watches German cheese videos? I don't know. You have to ask Noah Mark. What are you asking me for? Whatever he's into, I don't want to know. Base Beerus, thank you for the $2. OM2 Cool, I love how Cornette calls him Wheeler Useless. Is that what he calls him? George Seckman, what's going on, George? Announcers should remain impartial and not try to start storylines on their own. I agree with New Japan suspending Charlton for going off script on his own. Well, I disagree. I think it's bullshit. I think if they have an issue with it, pull him aside and tell him, don't do that again. I think suspending him is a bullshit move. But, you know, look, the culture over there is different, and maybe they have a lower tolerance for that sort of thing. I think you could certainly, unless he was warned in advance and he did it anyway, like if he was insubordinate in some way, then that's a different story. But if we assume that there was nothing said in advance and he just kind of went and did it to try to spice things up a little bit, then pull him aside and say, look, you shouldn't have done that. Don't do that again. Simple as that. I think it's a bitch move. And I think Tony Schiavone posting that tweet, frankly, was a bitch move. Oz and Gloria says, I'm sure everyone will treat Hobbs' impending loss to Moxley as graciously as they did when equally boring big guy Wardlow lost to Samoa Joe clean. Well, you got a lot of bad opinions tonight. So you're denying that Wardlow was super over at one point. See, you're just being blind now to that. Oz says, WCW legend Jeff Jarrett is better than WWE bootlicker John Cena. I think Oz is under the influence of something tonight. BCOM, see clearly, I love Moxley so much, but it's time to drop the title at the next big show, Revolution. He needs to not have that world championship. Love you, Solo, and this community we have. Love you guys. Yes, he needs to drop the title by Revolution. I agree. I think it'll be to Darby. I think Darby gets a token run. He's not going to have it for very long either. Thank you, brother. We got T-Mac 034. Will a wild Slapnuts appear one last time? Says, shout out to MarkyD123 for the joke. Jeff Jarrett is tripping if he thinks that he should win the AEW championship. Arabian Knight, who'd Hobbs work after Mox? You mean who would he work? He's not fighting for a title. I don't see a top heel at the moment free to work with him. He would be a better fit in the Hurt Syndicate than Anthony Bones. Maybe. I don't know. Take any of the million fucking people on the roster and manufacture a story for them. They have so many people. I'm sure we could come up with some kind of story for the guy. As long as he's doing something. But don't just have him lose and then just drop off the face of the earth. That's all I'm saying. Richie, are we going to get Hollywood Hogan back? They made headlines with the booze. No. Did you see him walk out there on Monday night? You think he belongs on fucking television? He belongs in a rocking chair. He can barely move. Oz says, Jeff Jarrett is picking his final run opponents a la Sting. Well, he can pick whoever he wants to. Tony Khan is the boss, though. Tony Khan still has final say, yay or nay, over who he works with. And by the way, Sting didn't, to my knowledge, Sting didn't handpick all the people he worked with. He chose the Young Bucks for his final match. But Sting wasn't showing up with, like, Hey, I got a list here, Tony, of all the guys I want to work with. And John Cena has said he's not lobbying for any opponents. He's just going to show up to work and do what he's told. Maybe Jared is doing things differently. The average grunt, Omega and Ospreay, for IWGP Tag Team Champions, please. Styles fan, do you see the FS1 lawsuit and the Joy Taylor stuff? No. No, I have not read about that. Oh, wait, are you talking about the Skip Bayless thing? Is that the Skip? Okay, I did hear about that. I don't know all the details. I just read that he offered her money to... Well, I mean, just the thought of it makes me want to fucking puke. But if that's the Skip Bayless thing, yes, I did hear about that. And I don't like Skip Bayless anyway, so fuck him. That's my thoughts on that. Insecure Skeletor. I was at the show tonight. I hope we came across well. I see Omega back to feuding with Takeshita for the international title. You see the Bucks trying to get with Kenny when they return. That's possible. I don't see Kenny going after the international title, though, because I think they're building to him and Okada for the continental title. And if he's going to wrestle Takeshita, he's going to have to win. Because Kenny should not be going in there and losing to Takeshita. Takeshita already beat him. If they run that match back again, Kenny's going to win. And Kenny Omega doesn't need the international title. The Juliet. Had to hear the new super chat. Also, to everybody in the path of the California wildfires, stay safe. Thank you, Juliet. I hope you are having a wonderful night. Takeshita beat him twice. That's right. Thank you for reminding me. So do you honestly believe that if you get these two back in the ring for a third time, it's going to go the same way it did the first two times? I mean, my whole thing with the Continental Classic, when I thought they were teasing something with Okada and Takeshita, was that they would meet in the finals. And you could merge, you could unify the two titles. So, I mean, I suppose you could always have Kenny go in with a belt and have Okada go in with a belt and just unify them. But I don't get the sense that Tony Khan wants to do that. Justin G gifted a channel membership to the Winston Slip. Very kind of you. Thank you, Justin. M. Mill. Wow, look at this. Oh wow! I just noticed we hit our super chat goal, and I guess M Mills has a lot to do with that. M Mills just went crazy, came in with a 25, a 20, and another 20. M Mills is on a roll tonight, and another 20. You are amazing, and another 20, and David also with a 20. I see you two were tag teaming here to try to get to. Although she was doing a lot of the heavy lifting here, it looks like, these last 15 minutes. Holy shit. Hey, unregistered hypercam says, BS equals bullshit, the Charlton stuff. Ah, I see. Okay. I see. Well, it looks like we're doing at least two rounds of Be the Booker. I mean, did we hit the likes goal? We did. Wow. Okay. So we're doing... You guys are getting three rounds of Be the Booker tonight. Guess you guys really wanted to be the book. David, thoughts on the Rock promo on NXT last night? That's what happens when you go out there with no fucking clue what you're going to say. It was very clear to me he had no plan whatsoever. He just went out there and just completely riffed off the cuff. Not saying it was bad. I mean, it was, you know, I'm sure if you were in the live audience, I mean, he was dropping F-bomb after F-bomb after F-bomb. I'm sure... They posted, by the way, the full uncensored version of that on the CW Network YouTube channel. So if you want to hear all the cuss words not get bleeped, you can go on there and watch the segment. I mean, it was a whole lot of nothing. It was just they wanted to pop a rating, and guess what? It worked. NXT did its biggest number in 5 years. They did 957,000 viewers. And I had people tweeting me going, you see, Salamas or NXT, man, it's the hot show. You got to... you got to start reviewing it again. I'm like, dude, the only reason the show did 957,000 viewers, I promise you, had nothing to do with Julia or Trick Williams. Nothing. It's called The Rock was promoted to be on the show. And next week, it'll be right back down to earth. So do not mistake that number for anything other than what I call the rock pop or the rock bump. That's what that number was. It's a great number. But the only reason the number was that high was because The Rock was on the show. So the promo, I thought, was really not much of anything. He didn't say anything in the promo. What did he do? He clearly was irritated by the people who were complaining about him and Cody Rhodes hobnobbing on TV. And so he lashed out on that. And then he just said a whole bunch of nothing. He did a rock promo, like a rock promo off the cuff. That's what it was. I didn't think it was anything special. But people lapped that shit up. So good for them. BCOMC, clearly, are we really doing this cope thing? Tony, chill. It's his idea. This is what he wants to do. So we're getting cope. It is what it is. DEH Sires, that viewers is not real, and no one reported that aside from Samba TV, which measures viewers from certain smart TVs. Total viewership comes next month. Yeah, I mean, I find that very hard to believe. There's no way that Raw, with all the promotion and everything, and all the people on Netflix who would at least check it out, part of the episode out, there's no way they did only 600,000 viewers. Like, I don't even believe that. If it was real, though, it's a terrible number, but I don't buy it. Duff's Vid, since we haven't seen the AEW World title belt since John won it, do you think we'll see a new design after he loses it? Why? It's a great-looking belt. It's probably the best-looking title outside of the Winged Eagle in all of wrestling. Why change it? It's one thing to change a title if it looks like shit. The AEW World title is one of the most beautiful looking belts actively right now on any wrestling show. It's a hell of a lot nicer than the giant WWE logo belts. Why the hell would you change it? BCOMC, clearly, I love Adam Copeland, just not the cope thing. It's annoying, and they're laying it in. And go Hobbs. Surprise the haters. Well, a lot of people will be rooting for Hobbs, but is he actually going to win? No, he's not. David Thiering should have said in my previous Super Chat that I did not know if you went back and watched it after TNT. The Rock thing? Yeah, I mean, last night, it was like, what was it, 6 minutes, I think his segment was? I mean, I've watched the entire show since last night. So I'm very happy that Obafemi got a big win and Julia got a big win, you know, and that would have been a great way to go off the air, because after Obafemi won, he went on stage and Julia came back out with her title and they posed, and it's like, okay, it's the crowning of like a new guard in NXT, and they didn't even end the show with it. They ended with The Rock. It's like, okay. Alex Ochoa, WrestleMania 41, Goldberg against the Bukkake Ghost. I'm going with the Ghost. Preflo Dollar. Look at that. He went from a half dollar to a full dollar. Apparently, Hogan asked why the fans would boo Jimmy Hart. And when is... Well, that's the joke. He didn't actually ask that. And when is the next Solo Salcedo crossover? I like her hopeful optimism and your realism. When did we do a stream? It was a year ago, I think. We did Royal Rumble predictions on her channel, so... stay tuned. You never know. I mean, if the opportunity comes up, I'm open to it. And Styles fan says Skip Bayless wanted to sleep with a hairdresser who filed the lawsuit. She also talked about how Joy Taylor slept her way to the top of FS1. All right, so I didn't know that part of the lawsuit because I just don't care. And I've just been avoiding just a lot of just news in general. I'm just not really paying attention to anything right now. So, but yeah, the Skip Bayless thing I did hear about. So, couldn't happen to a nicer guy. I just never cared for him. And he has said a lot of stupid shit over the years. I just never liked the guy. So, if it turns out that's what he did, I'm not surprised. The average grunt. Soken is a Final Fantasy composer, hence the vibe. Ah, well, see, that makes sense, though. I know Kenny is a big Final Fantasy guy. So, it had that vibe to it when I heard the music. And hearing that makes a lot of sense. B-Money-04, so does John Moxley lose to Darby Allin at Revolution, then get cashed in on by Christian Cage to write him off TV so he can climb Mount Everest? That's exactly what I said a few weeks ago, so my mind hasn't changed. You heard it here first, so yes, that's exactly what I think is going to happen. That's why I said I think they do Moxley and Copeland at Grand Slam. And then Revolution is, what, 3 weeks later? Like March 5th or something? And by then Darby will be back, because they just wrote him off with an injury angle. And you do Darby and Mox there. And Darby wins the belt. 1 year to the very event where Sting retired, Darby wins the AEW World Championship. And then on Dynamite that week, if not that same night, then on Dynamite that Wednesday, Christian cashes in his contract and wins the championship from him. You do an angle to write him off so he can go off to begin preparing for the climb, because he's committed to doing it. The only reason he didn't climb last year is because he broke his foot in that match with Jay White. But the climb would be in April if he does it, so not a lot of time left between now and then. And usually I think it's like a 2-month climb. So you give him that token title run, you get the belt off Moxley, and then you just kind of go from there. Whatever the sequence of events then is, from Christian to whoever comes after Christian, I don't know. I mean, we could come up with any number of names who should be, you know, AEW World Champion this year, like Ospreay. But if that happens, I don't see that happening until later in the year. But I think that's how it plays out, yeah. I think it's going to be Darby at Revolution. Everest should be closed. There's a lot of dead bodies on Everest. Like, if you've read about what happens up there, it is scary. Like, imagine you're climbing that mountain, and I'm sure it's just windy and frigid, and there's snow blowing in your face. And yeah, the higher up you go, the oxygen level, like everything, right? And imagine you're walking by and you just see bodies buried in the snow. Like, this is commonplace there. It's not like they can just have people go up there and retrieve them. So they're just laying there. Just to remind you of how things could turn out for you. Right? I bet those people, when they climbed up there, thought they were going to come back down, and they didn't. So you need to know the risks. And there are people who lose their lives on that mountain who have been mountain climbing and training and preparing to do this for years. Darby's been doing it for probably a handful of months. I mean, I know he likes to do crazy shit, but I hope he knows what he's doing. That's all I can say. I hope he knows what he's doing. Justin says, I live at 5,500 feet elevation. Hell with Everest. Chris Manson, do you think Samantha Irvin will be All Elite? I do. Look, I pitched the idea of her managing Ricochet. You run the risk of her ending up becoming a bigger star than him. But I think they could get tremendous heat. So do I think she ultimately ends up there? Yes, because I think she wants to perform. That's why she left WWE. They didn't see her as a performer. They wanted her as a ring announcer. She wants to perform. She wants to be on the show. She wants to be a character. She wants to be a manager. I mean, I don't see any reason for her not to join. Right? You know, Tony Khan would probably bring her in. Mount Everest equals one of the highest graveyards in the world. It probably is the highest graveyard in the world. What else would be higher? All right, we got three rounds of Be the Booker to do because you guys killed it tonight. My reward to you. Let us begin.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
Oh, it's time, baby. It's time. It's Vader time. It's time to Be the Booker. This is round number one, which means we're booking nine matches tonight. And I think what I'll do is I'll save the stipulations for the final round. So we'll pick stips for all the matches in round three. Let us begin with Tag Team Be the Booker, as we usually do. As we take this here for a spin. And we begin with Roppongi Vice, Rocky Romero, and Trent Barretta. Is how we are beginning Be the Booker. Roppongi Vice. Roppongi Vice is going to take on American Alpha, Chad Gable, and Jason Jordan. See, I was on the fence about how this was going to end up. I was a big American Alpha fan. And I'm very sad they never got a proper run on the main roster together. Loved American Alpha. When was the last time we landed on who? Power Spying Games. American Alpha? I think we landed on them once before. Women's Be the Booker. I know we've chosen this woman before. We have Emma. I don't think Emma's even wrestling anymore. Emma gonna go one-on-one with Maki Ito. That just sounds like a terrible match. Where is Maki Ito? I haven't heard Maki Ito's name mentioned in a while. Men's Be the Booker. Our first main event of the evening begins with Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Terminator. Look at this. The Terminator is in the main event. The governor. They call him a governor, too. Bet he's glad he's not the governor right now. Wouldn't want that headache. Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to step in the ring against... Uh-oh. Tony D'Angelo had your opponent whacked. Choose again. Carefully. Somebody is sleeping with the fishes. I don't know who it was. We got to choose again. Somebody bit the dust. Arnold Schwarzenegger against Bill Goldberg. Look, everyone, it's Goldberg. Talk about the blind leading the blind. My God, the injuries that would take place in this match. Just the absolute state of this main event. Yes, Goldberg is with us. If you missed that great moment on TNT last night, I was talking about Goldberg and Gunther. And for some reason, I said Goldberg. It's like I merged the two of them together. And we had a very nice laugh about Goldberg, which I actually think is quite an appropriate name for him to use here in this final run that he's going to have this year. Charlotte says, three boring minutes. Interesting train wreck. Yeah, train wreck is a good way to put it. Oh, man. You knew I wasn't giving the bell to Goldberg in my main event. You had to know that. We begin round number two. You're getting three. This is round two. We got to do better than that. We let's see. Let's see those Ghoulberg emojis, everybody. Let's see the ghost. Couple of weeks, Raw's going to be in Atlanta. Ghoulberg is going to be back. Get ready. Broke Solo and JD for 5 minutes. Yeah, I've never turned that red in my entire life. I looked like my blood pressure was like 300 over 200 or something. All right, Tag Team Be the Booker. We have the fabulous Rougeau Brothers. But see, this is from my favorite period where they had the little American flags and they were mocking everybody. They were the All-American Boys. They had great theme music, too. The fabulous Rougeau Brothers. Are going to be taking on Doom. Ron Simmons and Butch Reed. And look who's in the middle. Terry Funk. Teddy Long. What the hell is wrong with me? Teddy Long. Terry Funk would have been a hell of a manager for Doom. But that ain't Terry Funk. I think Solo needs sleep. Fucking Ghoulberg last night. I'm calling Teddy Long Terry Funk. I don't know what the hell's wrong with me. This is what happens when you sleep 4 hours a night. What the hell's going to happen on the SmackDown stream this Friday? All right, Women's Be the Booker. We have Wendi Richter, the former Women's World Champion. Toni Storm. Timeless Toni Storm never did get her match with Wendi Richter. Maybe she'll get her match and be the booker. Timeless Toni Storm is in here, you know. Wouldn't that be something if we landed on Timeless Toni Storm and Wendi Richter? That is definitely not Timeless Toni Storm. That is Rosa Mendez. And that is an automatic buzz. All right, our second main event of the night. We already buzzed one main event. We need a winner here. All right. We have the Monster Abyss. Points to whoever remembers the name of the giant board with the nails in it that he's holding in his hand here in this photo. We have Abyss. Against Solo Sikoa. That's not a main event. I don't give a shit what anybody says. That is not a main event. I am trying to book a main event. A match on the marquee that you look at and you go, holy shit, I need to buy a ticket to see that. That is not Abyss and Solo Sikoa. That's two in a row now. Gone. Lost. What are we doing here? What is going on here? Is Russo booking this show? I think so. I think he's invaded, bro. All right, I said we're doing stipulations here, didn't I? Okay, why don't we pick the stip first? We are doing stipulations for all of these matches. We're going to begin with the tag team match. And it is going to be a tag team TLC match. Now, there have been some classic ones. Edge and Christian and the Hardys and the Dudleys were in most of them. Let's see. They're in here, too. Edge and Christian are in here, the Hardys, the Dudleys. They're all in here. So let's see. Oh, for God's sake. God. We have the Butcher and the Blade. The Butcher and the Blade. In this TLC match. And they will be taking on Too Cool. This is a disaster of a night. Sometimes it's just one of those nights. This is turning into one of those nights. No, get out of here. Getting ahead of myself. All right, women's match. This is why I don't gamble. Like, if I went to Vegas or I went to Atlantic City and I hit, like, the craps table or the poker table, you know, I'm, like, blowing on the dice. And, like, this is what would happen. I would lose my shirt, okay? And ain't nobody need to see that. This is why I don't gamble. We land on Anna Polbro as our stipulation for the women's match. What is going on here? I don't know what's going on here. But apparently are we putting two women on a pole? I don't know what we're doing here. We're having a pole match, everybody. So the two women we land on are going to be basically, I guess, pole dancing. They're going to be pole dancing. That definitely is a Russo stipulation. Well, I mean, all right. We've got Eva Marie. All Red Everything is going to be in the pole match. And Eva Marie and, well, I mean, we won one. We finally won one. Not the way that I expected, but we finally won one. Now we come to our third and final main event of the evening. Don't ask questions, just go with it. That wasn't a wrestling match. Here we go. Stipulation for our main event. This main event is going to be a stretcher match. It's going to be a stretcher match. Now we find out who it's going to be with. Are you ready? Here we go. I'm blowing on the dice. I'm rolling the dice. Fuck off. Fuck you. You fucking fuck. How did we go from Anna Polbro to Vince Russo in our main event? I don't even know what to say to this. This truly has been invaded by Russo tonight. This has been the Russo takeover of Be the Booker. Yeah, we have gone full WCW 2000 on this stream. And this is a stretcher match, by the way. Don't forget. I can think of one person who would love to put Vince Russo on a stretcher. He's in here, too. This is going to be very interesting. This is going to be interesting. Vince Russo in a stretcher match against Alberto Del Dipshit. We have just completed. I am safely going to assume that this is the case. That we have just completed the worst series of Be the Booker rounds in the history of Be the Booker. It just doesn't get any worse. I can't think of one that's worse. It doesn't exist. I wish we could have done better. I feel like I have I feel like I've let you down. I feel like I've let you down, but that's all I got. The single worst edition of Be the Booker in the history of this channel has just been completed. There's been worse. BlissFan says that it's been worse. I find that very hard to believe. We've had worse matches, but it was just one round of shit after another. I can't believe that we went from a pole bro match to then Russo in the main event. How does that happen? Won't be coming back to watch this promotion. We just killed the territory. We killed the town is what we did tonight. Congratulations. Warhawk Rambo. Vince Russo has killed another promotion. What is that, number two, three? Warhawk Rambo says, is Natalia Markova in Be the Booker? She is not. She probably should be, though. She used to be our House of Glory women's champion. And Richie, buy or sell, Eva Marie or Mandy Rose? Mandy Rose. Also, what was The Rock bothered by on NXT? No, he was poking fun at all the people who were bitching the night before about him and Cody being friends and drinking tequila together. And, you know, he said, basically, shut your bitch ass up and enjoy the ride that The Rock is taking you on. That's basically what he said. Goldberg is not a super chat yet, but it will be. I'm contemplating ideas. I need a good image of Goldberg as like an undead zombie or a ghoul of some kind. I know I'm gonna want that. And so then I'll have to try. I'll try to be creative and see what we can come up with. But yes, we'll put together a Goldberg super chat for sure. Is Charles Mason in Be the Booker? No, fuck that guy. Russo put himself over. Yeah, it's almost like Russo, you know, as if he one day would have made himself the world champion or something. Solo's card is still better than Hell in a Cell in 2019. You talk about Hunter and Tony booking, yet you pulled this shit tonight. I have failed you. I mean, look, I have failed you. I don't know what else to say. Well, thank you guys. Thanks for all the added rounds of Be the Booker, because look what happened. But at least we hit our goal. HOG executives are watching this Be the Booker and are reconsidering your role as commissioner. I'll see them in Chicago. I guess they may pull me aside and pull the plug on me next week. Guess we'll find out. My time may soon be up. I have brought shame upon them. James says he's going to be having surgery for the first time on a broken wrist, and he is scared. Wish me luck. James, you're going to be fine. I am sure that everything is going to work out exactly the way that it's supposed to. It's nothing to be scared about. I assume they're going to put you out for it. So you're not going to feel anything. And I've had surgery before, and I made it out okay. So I know you will too. So best of luck. Well, I'm going to be back with you on Friday night. I got a rare night off tomorrow, which I'm very much looking forward to, so I can catch up on some TV that I've fallen behind in. But Friday night, I'll be live after SmackDown. And maybe we'll have Goldberg with us by then. I don't know. We already have the new Hogan Super Chat, the new $23 one. So we'll have to see where Goldberg may fall in the pecking order there. I might cycle out an old one. I don't know. Instead of just continuously adding to the list, I like to cycle out Super Chats and then replace them with a new one every now and then. So I'll have to figure it out. But yeah, if you got any ideas or any images floating around of an undead Goldberg, I would consider it. Send it my way and I'll see if it's useful. You would have gotten a job in WCW in 2000 with this kind of booking? I wouldn't have wanted to work in WCW in 2000. If they offered me a job, I would have said no. Who wants to go work for a sinking ship? You can get rid of the learning tree. What do you think? Is it time? Is it time to cut down the learning tree? I don't know. People seem to love it so much. Oh, look at Steve. Steve's already on it, man. Steve Mello. Shout out to Steve. He's already on it. Am I going to like it? I gotta really like it, though. See if I'm going to use it. He's got to look like a ghoul, though. He's got to have some kind of, like, ghost element to it. We'll see. I'll have to take a look at what he sent me. He already sent me something. This guy works fast. He doesn't mess around. I like it. All right, be well. Stay safe. I'll see you back here for the Friday night stream. And if you missed it, we had fun on the Raw review. Big Raw review, too. Over 30,000 views and counting on the Raw review from Monday night. So thank you for that. Picked up a whole bunch of new subs. By the way, you know, let me check real quick here before I sign off, because we are very close to 83,000 subs. All right, we're about 10 subscribers away. So I think there's a pretty good chance that by Friday night, we may hit 83,000. So maybe we'll celebrate if we do. Be well. Stay safe. If you're in California, please, in all seriousness, stay safe. It's very scary out there. And I'll see you back here on Friday night. Take care, guys.